Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On today's show, is the N9 for Newsnight? Ratings continue to slide and budgets are about to be cut. And they've just lost their editor. What next for their flagship news show? Also on the programme, just three publishers dominate newspapers now, but does it matter? YouTube announces new channels and platforms while Netflix subs slow. All that, plus in the media quiz, we guess the mystery voice of news. That's all coming up on this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, the BBC, ITV and a number of super indies are to be investigated by the Competition and Markets Authority. This is over the use of freelancers in the industry and whether companies including Hattrick and Tiger Aspect have fallen foul of competition law. In the wake of the conflict in Israel, the EU has written to Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg to remind them of their responsibilities to take down misinformation. While Meta have pointed to their efforts to take down content, X's boss has simply asked European leaders to list the violations on his platform. And Donald Trump has demanded an apology from Forbes magazine after they omitted him from their rich list. Maybe next year, Donald. Maybe next year. Now, joining me for the London Podcast Studios are two guests who are always in the top 400 media podcast contributors. First up, it's Alex Hudson from Newsweek. Hello.
Good afternoon.
So, Big Brother's back. Have you watched any of it?
No.
Are you glad you're not watching, or do you think I can recapture my youth?
I am very happy it's back. I'm very happy that the TV executives have thought, quick, we need to make some cheap TV because ad revenue is falling. And I'm very happy that it feels more friendly to the diversity that Britain has to offer.
And it's a bit more like it used to be as well. It's less influencers, slightly more real people. In inverted commas.
Real people who know exactly what they're getting in for, know exactly where their Instagram influence pay packet might come from, and know exactly what they're doing. The innocence of the first Big Brother of forever ago is dead, I am afraid.
Craig. Anyway, and next, Alex, we welcome back broadcast consultants and media pod goat. It's Paul Robinson.
Hello. Pod goat?
Yes.
That's the nicest thing someone said to me all day.
Any nice stamps in your passport recently?
Well, no, I've been trying not to go anywhere at all, actually. Ooh. I am going to Nice on Sunday for MIPCOM. LA the week after that. But no, I've tried to be away from Heathrow. It's been great. I've had 4 months of not going anywhere near. Fantastic.
Excellent. And we were just talking earlier, obviously the Jimmy Savile drama, The Reckoning, aired on Monday. Did you manage to catch it?
I did. And I was sort of in two minds whether to watch it or not. I mean,
because I'm just remembering your sort of bio. You were sort of Radio 1 in the 90s. Were you sort of very much post him?
I joined end of 89.
Right.
And he'd already gone.
Yeah.
And at the time, I didn't really think about it, but now I'm extremely grateful. Mm. So I've never met Jimmy Savile. Mm. What was interesting about Radio 1 is that Jimmy Savile wasn't really there very much because all his shows were pre-recorded. He only ever recorded links. He never played a single record. And he'd come in and do a month's programmes in about 2 hours and the car would be parked on the meter outside. So there wasn't really much influence with him in the culture. But I'm glad I never met him. Mm. I mean, I watched it. I thought it was chilling. You know, it was well done. Steve Coogan, brilliant. I mean, carried it off, I think, absolutely fantastically. It was made by ITV, of course, and the BBC. So I think I do believe Charlotte when she says, you know, I gave them a free brief, but I thought it was probably pretty true to the real man.
Well, sticking with the BBC, reports that Newsnight's editor has left his role. Deadline said on Wednesday that Stuart McLean is joining the BBC's Africa Bureau. It comes at a bad time for BBC Two's long-running flagship news programme, which is facing severe cuts to its budget. Alex, £5 million quid cut is quoted in the article. Is that doable on Newsnight?
Yes. So there's a number of things going on, and it's been a conversation for as long as I can remember. Like, Newsnight's viewing figures are about 300,000, give or take, and some of the media is taken. When Paxman left, it was at 1.4 million, which was inflated figures because it was Paxman leaving. So millions of people have never, ever watched Newsnight, or at least not in the modern times. Mm. And you're ignoring the internet, you're ignoring social media, and you're still relying on ye olde, how many people watched it? You're still using barbs as this thing that somehow people still hold dear. That's not the way it works. BBC needs to work on impact, lifetime user value, all of these new mechanics that we need to think about more effectively. So it's not a good judge. And there was BBC exec, Katie Sell, former BBC exec, she was talking on a podcast saying, is it really the right thing to spend all this money on a programme that's only watched by 300,000? You could do that same investigative journalism but spread it across news in different parts of the day. BBC News has an impact team whose sole job it is to move that journalism around the organisation already. It can do it for less. The BBC has to spend more on original journalism or else what is it doing? Does it need to be Newsnight necessarily? No. But can Newsnight still run on less money? Yes. Does it run the risk of ending up as GB News or Talk TV and taking too much inspiration from that format? Yes.
Paul, has it just been protected for kind of too long and now it's sort of catching up with reality?
I think the format needs refreshing. Yes, I do. I mean, I do think it's a little bit staid, a little bit predictable. You know, I think Newscast does a better job, for example, as a daily current affairs programme. However, do I think the BBC should be doing something nightly, which is analytical in a block? I do. I think it's key to their purpose, their public purpose. And I think it's important the BBC does investigative journalism. Now, on the costs, you know, I don't like the idea of money coming out of news because I think the BBC should be investing in news. I think it's absolutely one of the things that underpins the BBC. But that doesn't mean to say you shouldn't be efficient. You absolutely should. But I think the BBC should be investing in news. And I do think some sort of structured investigative strand that's there every night. Maybe it needs, you know, a new look. Maybe it needs a high profile presenter. We know that, you know, names will bring audiences in. You know, Alex has just made that point very eloquently. But I do think that some sort of current affairs investigative journalism on the BBC should continue on BBC One or BBC Two.
I mean, Alex, there's been quite a bit of changes in BBC News, the bring together of the domestic and world news channels. Kind of mixed reviews. Obviously, there's been trouble with it, but it's probably, to a certain degree, the right thing to do.
How does the BBC deal with this emerging sort of personality journalism? Mm. How does it deal with the globalisation of news? How does it deal with the fact that it's still funded by the licence fee payer? Consolidation is good, but what they have done is they are thinking about it as a sort of removing content rather than optimising content. Mm. They're allowing journalists less freedom on their own, of their own volition. It's more being centralised into a big amorphous blob of content rather than it being sort of specialised journalists going out and doing these interesting things for programmes that then travel across the BBC.
But that's one of their aims, isn't it? To try and reduce kind of like duplication and commissioning so that they can put some of the money behind more individualistic sections.
They're always changing the organogram. They're always having a restructure. They're always thinking about how they do fewer things better or, you know, make the unmissable omnipresent. All of these things. But it's still the same issue that if you're doing good original off-diary journalism, you're not going to tell anyone else about it because that's when those stories die. And if someone else has a similar idea, journalists aren't that sort of singly thinking about one issue. There is often going to be an overlap. And if the BBC does too many good stories, that's not a problem. It's if they're not doing any, that's the issue.
Well, there's been a very large off-diary story this week with the issues around Israel and Palestine. How do you think news has done in covering this? Is it almost uncoverable?
It has to be covered effectively. The idea that you can cover it without the instant polarisation of every side is... And I'm going to be incredibly careful and speak very slowly because it's a case of every single word you say on this issue is under the sharpest spotlight. And so there are so many ways that you can say a single word wrong and it affects the way the entire discussion goes from there. And so I think I'm going to simply quote a TikTok influencer. I'm going to take a tick called The History Wizard, fascinating content. And he says, can I sum this up in an easy to understand way? No, the system is effed sideways. Anyone who tells you differently is a liar. And so how you get through all of that in a factual way, with given the propaganda machines on all sides, both domestically and internationally, and how you get to the heart of the story factually, given the centuries of history around this, it has to be covered. It is very difficult to cover effectively, responsibly, and factually.
Well, it's hard to be covered in a way that everyone's happy with, isn't it, Paul?
Yes, it is. And it's not a surprise the BBC's had complaints. I thought John Simpson's piece was pretty good, and I pretty much agree with what he said. And that was, you know, those who criticised the BBC and these four lawlords who've criticised the BBC for not using the word terrorist in connection with Hamas has caused a furore. And he says, well, no, we're not calling them that. We're calling them extremists. And the reason for that is it's about our voice. Our voice is about being impartial. It's about you making up your mind. You know, we present you with the evidence. We interview people who are terrorists. We interview people with different points of view, and we try and obviously be balanced, and then you make up your mind. And I think that's a very clear and very right way of putting it. I've been pretty impressed with what the BBC's done. Very tough to cover it, and you could criticise it very easily, but overall, I feel they presented the facts clearly and concisely, up to you to make up your own mind.
Well, sticking with news, but moving to print media, an interesting report this week revealed that just three UK publishers control 90% of print reach in the country. That's according to Tom Chivers and his paper, Who Owns the UK Media? I'll leave you, dear listener, to guess who those top three are before Alex reveals the results. Who are the big three?
DMG Media, News UK and Reach.
It's not a big surprise, is it? Or is it?
It's not a big surprise, but it's...
So is it, maybe it's a big surprise for people who aren't in the media.
It's a big surprise for this report to be phrased in the way it is. The idea that we are the top line of this story that's come out has been about the print media as if it's not 2023, as if we've suddenly gone back in time and print media is the way by which media conglomerates are judged. And Tom, who I love dearly and is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person who understands numbers better than most people, he's won awards for this data, trying to say that it matters that these people control the physical things is confusing. It doesn't make any sense to me. And so when he talks about sort of digitally, sort of says 10 of the top 15 online platforms used to access news in the UK are owned by Meta, Google and X Corp, that's more interesting. But then it's not their fault that the big media companies are owned centrally. Everything is a mush of conglomerate in the middle. I understand why this report exists. I understand why it's made headlines, but that Reach and DMG and the sort of the people that everyone knows, so all of the CEOs of these companies dominate the narrative, is not a surprise. What's surprising in this is the lack of TikTok discussion in this report and the influence that that has across the narrative, across the media.
I mean, Paul, is there a problem that basically sort of media / political elite are still a little bit obsessed with what's on the front pages?
I think that's true. I think this is a non-story, to be honest, because newspapers don't operate in a vacuum. They're just one way of sourcing news. And they used to be very, very influential.
But I would say they're still agenda setting. Like if you listen to the Today programme, which obviously reaches many millions of more people than subscribe to the newspapers, they clearly take direction from there. All the news channels cover the headlines, whether they should do or not.
Well, that is correct, and that may or may not be right. They may be lazy. I mean, I'm amazed at radio stations doing newspaper reviews these days. That seems to me something that completely should have gone years ago. No, the point is that, you know, newspapers are influential, but they're only part of the news agenda. They are concentrated. But in a way, does that matter? I mean, you take Reach Group. I mean, you've got in there the Daily Star, the Sunday Mirror, the Daily Mail, the Daily Express. Editorially, they could not be more diverse, yet they sit under one management structure. So, you know, I don't think there's a point there, particularly because, as Alex was saying, online is much more widely distributed. There are about 15 players that make up the news agenda. The BBC number three on online, which is interesting. So I don't think it matters. I really don't think it's an issue. I think it's a completely non-story.
So Alex, does it matter then whoever takes over the Telegraph, say?
It depends. So all of this talk around the CEOs of these companies coming in and sort of setting some sort of grand editorial policy that their editors must follow, at least in my experience, is greatly exaggerated. It hasn't happened to me, and I've been senior in some of these organisations, and the idea that we would be told to say one thing or another thing just is not
You mean
true.
There isn't a shady media cabal that controls all journalism?
No, I mean, as much as you might like to think it.
These people have never been to a newsroom where no one could agree on anything.
Yeah, all of it is chaos. It's chaos, and if anything, that there is rare, there is, in my experience, there has never been a conspiracy. It's always just someone forgetting to do something or someone Googling, putting a type in the thing. So there could be a problem with monopolistic power around the media, around one company controlling that narrative. But the risk is more with Google, with Meta, with TikTok, with TikTok's owner ByteDance. Mm. That's the real interesting question. And so that this report sort of cites TikTok's influence on news as being, I think it's 5 million users access news through TikTok, which is a confusing because it means people have clicked from TikTok into a news site. And actually, people consume news on TikTok. Young people, this is American data, but the UK numbers are similar, people will spend longer on TikTok than they do on Netflix. So it's you're trying to compare apples with apples without comparing the real impact of what audiences are consuming. And that is primarily, at least if you're under probably now 40, TikTok is the single biggest elephant in the room that this report does not get to the bottom of.
Paul, TikTok user?
Not at all.
Really,
no interest at all. No.
Even with work.
No interest at all.
If you downloaded it within 20 swipes, it would probably know your personality pretty much spot on and be able to give you the right.
That's
right
a big
stuff.
Worry too, isn't it, really? Yeah. I am worried it would just absorb so much time.
Yeah.
Suck out so much time. I just don't have time for it. I mean, I do Twitter, I do LinkedIn, do some Facebook. That is plenty for me. I don't need TikTok. I'm not going to go there.
But Alex, Paul's right in the sense it does become a massive time sink. And basically, if you're in it, you're in it. I'm a big user, love it. What comes out of it is very entertaining and very enjoyable.
And that's the point of this report. So it's, you don't need to go to a news website to get the news. So pick an influencer. There are TikTok influencers. Taylor Lorenz is probably the best example. There are a load of different others who produce bespoke TikTok content that you are given 1 minute, 3 minutes, however long you want, and you are told the story. You do not need to go anywhere else. And it is, Taylor Lorenz's point is actually that journalists' business plan now is to become the brand, to become this trusted person. As we get into the AI age, as we get into the Web3 age of everything becoming decentralized, your job is to become trusted and to become memorable and to become an appointment. And that means you don't need to go to a news site, but it's the people that are remembered. It's not the site they work for.
Okay, digital natives, stay with us as we've got more on Netflix, YouTube and podcasts after this short break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Paul and Alex are back with me for some more stories in brief. A few announcements from YouTube this week. The launch of primetime channels and also YouTube podcasts in the UK. Paul, what are primetime channels?
Well, primetime channels are really an aggregator of lots of other stuff. I think this is YouTube, who are massively viewed, but aren't sort of proper telly. I mean, YouTube is sort of seen as being something you watch, but it's not like the big telly on the wall. I think they want to grow into proper television and get the points for that. But also,
Over here in the UK.
Yeah. But I think the same in the US too. Okay. I mean, I think it's true in most of Europe, actually. I mean, there are countries where YouTube is less well used, largely because broadband's not so well developed. But the point being is, I think they're arguing that having multiple apps is a real problem and people don't like doing that. I've seen no evidence for that. I've seen no data to support that. It may be great, it may not be. I think more likely is that YouTube know that they are, you know, absolutely up there for discovery, and they don't want to lose that audience, and they want to now convert them into customers they can monetize in other ways. And it's smart, you know, to bring in NBCU content, bring in Paramount content, all under one umbrella, including podcasts. So all that stuff's in one place. It's easy for people.
So this is like, if you want to sign up to like Lionsgate TV, you can do that now through YouTube.
Yes. I mean, you're starting to see it a bit happening with the pay TV operators. You're seeing Sky and Netflix now operating together and advertising together, because they realize that people are confused. And also the data suggests that no one's going to buy really more than three or three and a bit of the streaming subs. Now, as more and more people come into that market, and you've got, you know, a lot of competitors still yet to come into the UK, you know, someone's going to fall by the wayside. You know, we know that Netflix, Amazon and Disney, in that order, are the three big ones. You know, how are the others going to get any market traction? By bundling with something like YouTube primetime channels, they can get into households.
Because it's a bit like what Prime Video do with channels as well, isn't it? It's so you can sort of do a sub within a sub.
Yeah, you can. I mean, obviously, Prime Video channels are subscription, and then they've got Freevee, which is the advertising part of it. It's the same idea. I think that what's interesting, though, is that the Amazon Prime Video channels are not generally big brands like Paramount coming in. They're either vertical channels, or they are, you know, sort of more like fast channels with fairly small number of hours, 100 or so hours, unique hours. This is actually, you know, real proper grown up telly with all the big Hollywood blockbusters. That's the difference.
It was interesting looking at what happened between Disney and Charter in the States, and sort of an understanding that cable companies are still quite useful for reaching subscribers and stopping churn, because these people are used to signing up people to long contracts. And everyone sort of thought we would be sort of deaggregated and Netflix would just exist on its own. But the streamers have sort of realized maybe doing a deal with their old enemies is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's interesting. I mean, the high ARPU has caused cord cutting to be, you know, the biggest in America, far more so than in Europe. But, you know, 51% of total hours viewed in the US is still to linear channels. I'm excluding fast channels there. So it's not as big as it was, but it's still not trivial. Mm-hmm. And people are saying, well, now Charter and Disney are having this bust up, it's the end of pay TV, you know, it's all going to go. And of course, that's not been the case. Both parties were actually very, very keen to get a resolution. And obviously, Disney's lost some of its channels, but Charter's managed to get a cost reduction. So I think it's interesting. At the end of the day, I don't think linear is going away. I mean, I'm going to MIPCOM next week. The hot topic, everyone's talking about either AI or fast. I've had so many invitations to cocktail parties to fast channels.
So fast, free, ad-supported television.
Yes, yeah. So, but it's linear. It's another linear service. So, you know, my belief is that streaming is not going to replace every linear service on the planet. It just isn't.
I saw about the BBC launching their own version of fast channels, slightly cobbled together version, sitting on iPlayer. If they're not ad supported, I thought, are they like Fubuzz channels with sort of PSB in the middle? I don't know.
It's like a burger without the burger, isn't it?
Yeah.
How you own the pipes. So this is the next stage of where we're going. The way that so much of Apple's money comes from App Store, where it just hosts and it takes 15% cut or 30% cut. And so this, as much as Elon Musk shouts about super apps, it's Alphabet's push for the super app. If Google can work out a way to own the pipes where everything comes from in the way that cable companies have done previously, that is a huge, huge cash cow for the next generation.
I mean, Alex, YouTube are also pushing into podcasts. There's always been quite a bit of podcast consumption on YouTube. I put podcasts in like inverted commas, but watching videos like ours on YouTube, where some people sit talking around a microphone, they're introducing the UK podcast into YouTube Music. They really want a bit of that market, don't they?
I tried to search for this earlier and it was still 404-ing for me. So this launch thing, I had to proxy in from the US and then I got access to it. It was very interesting. But question back, what's the difference between a YouTube video and a podcast?
Well, if you speak to someone under 25, they say there isn't a difference, and that they see podcasts as a type of content rather than like some audio delivered over RSS, which maybe podcast purists would like. I'm not saying I'm one of those, of course. I'm
just hinting, just
modern
hinting
and funky. But what they've seen is there's a lot of podcast-like consumption, and why not try and suck in the rest of the market into their place?
It's another Google play for that subscription model, for owning the pipes to that content. And so YouTube as an app on your phone is irritating if you don't pay for it. It won't let you play with it off. So this, looking through it, it says that you access it through Google Music and you can listen to podcasts even if your phone is switched off.
Yes.
And it's free for the moment, which is a kind of step away from the current model with YouTube as a whole, which is if you're not looking at it, they're going to switch it off and they're going to charge you the premium subscription fee. So it feels like the first step of YouTube softening slightly how it sees long-form content being consumed in this way. And I think it's a test. If they can see rapid growth with this, they'll look to soften that elsewhere.
Paul, YouTube, is this also them competing with Spotify, who are making their own play for video in those apps, particularly from those younger creators?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think Alex is absolutely right. I mean, you just want to own that conduit to the customer. And I think people are really love, I think, to have their music, their podcasts, their video, their telly, you know, their gaming all in one place. And the moment you've got to go different places for that. And I think that that consolidation is going to happen. It's not yet happening at that sort of level, but I think that's the next phase.
Well, still on telly, Netflix have announced a slowdown in new UK subscriptions with 4% growth year on year, which to me didn't actually seem that bad. I was like, that's, you know, it's less
pretty
than,
good, actually.
So previously, they were sort of more at the sort of 10, 15% mark. But I mean, given the competition, that isn't too bad, is it?
It's not. I mean, look, 68% of the UK population have used Netflix at some point. You know, they are the largest player. So, of course, you know, as more competition comes in, they are at risk of losing, you know, given that people are not going to, you know, maybe add new services indefinitely. So the fact they've actually not gone down, I think, is a miracle. Also, you know, you know about data, you know, it's 1 month's data, is, you know, next month might show something else, you know, you never know. So you got to be careful and look at the long-term trend. I mean, I think Netflix has got a slight problem now about what it stands for. I think, you know, Paramount coming in, it's been really interesting how it's positioned itself around Yellowstone and Star Trek and some key franchises. And you sort of know what Paramount's about. And if you want that, you'll go for it. Amazon, we know, and we know why everyone has Amazon. You know, Disney is Disney. I think Netflix hasn't quite got a position. It's tried to really focus on movies, original movies, and they've been a bit hit and miss, haven't they? Some are great, and some are, frankly, not so great. They're feeling the white heat of competition, and there's also the economic effect. I mean, there's no doubt people are being more careful with money, you know, we've seen some turn down because of that. So overall, I don't think this is a bad set of numbers for Netflix. I don't think anyone's going to be panicking. 230 million subscribers worldwide. You know, it's not a bad business. 1.4 billion profit last quarter. I think they're going to sleep at night.
Well, Alex, I mean, revenues are up. Subscribers are paying more, though. They're paying 14% more than the year before. Inflation or greedflation from Netflix?
Both. If revenues are going up, once again, we get into that data set of do we have good data? Like subscriptions going up seem like a good idea. Does that mean that retention is higher? Does that mean that churn is higher or churn is lower? You know, what is the average user time? What is the sort of callback? How often are they using it? How long are they using it for? What are the new discoveries on those channels? Are they going back to things they've watched before? Like all of these data sets, which for obvious reasons are never going to be public, but that's where you get into the sort of useful information. So if people are still paying for Netflix but aren't using it as much, that's when you're going to see those long-term trends taking a turn. But if you've, like you were saying, if you've got two-thirds of people already on the platform, you can't expect growth. But it's how they're using it that needs to evolve. So if you look at the way that Netflix has launched its gaming, which is a confusing, it makes both perfect sense and zero sense, and I don't know what to make of it yet. And it's so new, but it's Netflix trying what will keep people there for longer and keep people feeling like they're getting value for money. And so the difference between, you know, £10 or £15 isn't that big once you've agreed to pay for it. It's making sure that people feel like they're getting value from it.
I mean, the cost of subscription pool is fascinating because a lot of the streamers are making more money from the ad-supported customers than they are the subscription customers. So some people were saying them putting the price up is to sort of discourage people down a level to take ads because they can make more revenue per user.
I think the thing about the price going up is if you, you know, and Alex is totally right about, you know, we don't know what the behavior is, what the churn rate is, and the risk is if they're starting to watch less, then they will churn out. It's like any business, you know, if you don't consume it eventually, you realize what's that thing on my credit card and you stop paying it. The thing about subscription, though, is even though it's not contracted, it's lovely recurring revenue. And in terms of revenue per user, it's much higher than anything you can get from advertising. But there's no doubt that the AVOD advertising pool is growing. So they want to have basically have their cake and eat it. I think it's very interesting. I don't think anyone yet has completely got the balance right between the advertising and the ad-free part of this. And I think there's still more work to do on that. You know, Disney have had all sorts of sort of false starts on that. Let's see. I'm not sure where we're going with this yet. Personally, I pay not to have the ads, but that's just a personal preference.
Alex, are you ads? No ads?
No ads.
No ads. Okay, just finally before we hit the quiz, a lot of kind of podcast-related layoffs are still kind of flowing through. Particularly in America, we've seen two ends of the spectrum, really. So WNYC, sort of storied public radio station, got into podcasts quite early, laying off some staff. Also Pushkin Industries, taking quite a deep cut to its staffing levels. Alex, do you think sort of downturn or market correction? Is it just the crazy money's disappeared, or is this...
The crazy money's disappeared is the shortest answer. So according to Grand View Research, the global podcasting market's worth about $18.5 billion now. It's going to reach around $24 billion by the sort of end of this year, and it's going to keep growing until it's $130 billion. It says by 2030. The money is not going away, but more people are creating podcasts, and you're seeing what a dent in the advertising revenue. So before, you would see a 30-second hit at the start of a podcast, then it went to a minute, and now it's 1:30 on the most popular podcast. It's only one step away from two, and that's, you can see a change in the ad market. And alongside that, you're seeing the fact that everyone was, you know, pivot to social, pivot to video, pivot to podcast, as if that was the next logical conclusion. And the market has just corrected for that. There is so much money in podcasts because there are loyal audiences, and the brand recall is so high. If you've chosen to download this and to listen to this, you will know who these people are and you will relate to them. Like the amount of podcast hosts, as I'm sure you have had, people are friends with you. People come up to you like, and they know who you are and what you stand for and all of these things. They are friends with you. There is such a premium on that market. But there isn't such a premium that what Spotify paid for Rogan and everyone else could be repeated across the industry.
I mean, there's some of this pool that just has like radio echoes, and it's sort of not very sexy to sort of talk about the medium that's been around 100 years. But, you know, adding more ad load, that's quite a radio thing, isn't it? Realigning your businesses as the marketing kind of goes up and down, that's fairly standard. Are they just following a well-worn media track as it grows up as a media sector?
Yeah, I think so. And we know what happens when you add the ad load, and the ad load gets too heavy. You know what happens to the audience. And I mean, you know, you've had personal experience of that as well. I think that you know, I would take this outside the podcast sector and say, you know, I spend quite a lot of time in LA, and on the back of the writer's strike, thank goodness we now solved, layoffs at Netflix and Disney that triggered a whole load of people, I think, reappraising, you know, market correction, absolutely agree with Alex. But also I think it's about people using the opportunity because they think, I can get away with people going now because everyone else is doing it. I'm not going to get criticized for it. In fact, if I have shareholders, I'm probably going to get praised for doing it because I'm seen to do something about cost base. You know, there is some softening of advertising. So I think a lot of people who might otherwise want to do maybe downsize a bit are doing it now because they have the window to do it. I think it will change next year, but currently we're going to see more of it. And we've seen it right across the entire sector, particularly in LA, where they're still like little nervous Nellies.
Just time for the media quiz. This week entitled, The Mystery Noise of Media News. Trademark pending. Our production team have three news noises. You tell me the story that they hint at. So slip your headphones on whilst we test the buzzers. So buzz in with your name if you know the answer. So Paul, you will say.
Paul.
And Alex, you will say.
Alex.
Let's hear mystery noise number one.
We're all really, really sad and we're really going to miss her.
Paul.
Paul.
That is Holly Willoughby leaving this morning after 14 years. And I'm sure they're really sad to lose her. And I'm sure that she made the decision herself.
Are you okay?
I am okay. I'm just about coping with it. I mean, I did think it was quite extraordinary watching Mark Austin doing the news, and he was covering the conflict in Israel.
From Israel.
From Israel. And then he had a news flash in his ear. And it was, oh, Holly Willoughby's resigning from this morning. I thought that was the most bizarre bit of news I saw this week.
It was, Alex, a strange end to Holly's reign.
I don't know what to say. That hint about whether or not it was her decision or not, I had not that it felt like her decision. Is it not her decision? I don't.
Look, here's my theory, right? And I've got no evidence for this. And I'm just, this is just comment. Nothing. I believe that, you know, obviously they thought, well, we need a clean slate, but we can't get rid of Holly at the same time as Phil. Let's let her, you know, come back and, you know, sort of say her goodbyes. And we'll, you know, we'll gradually, you know, let her work her way out of the system and we'll start with a brand new team.
It is a strange one. So Philip had like a sort of 30 second montage. I think she got some messages on like the side of TV Centre in the opening titles. Like it's just going to be like a small card is shown for the next presenter.
It's strange that she didn't get the chance to come back in and do the whole like whole show of tears and all that. Sort of, that's the surprising thing. I think.
Doesn't that tell you it's probably not a decision?
I mean, Paul, this is people leaving shows is complex for everyone involved, isn't it?
Well, in radio, it's very simple. You go and see the programme director and he says, Matt, you've just done your last show. And you go, oh, right.
Are you saying this is my last podcast?
But definitely okay, not. You're right. Too good. But you know what I'm saying? Yes. You know, this is what happens. I mean, I think that ideally you want to let people sort of say their goodbyes. But, you know, I mean, what more is she going to say? For goodness sake, you know, how many more false tears can we have? I'm look, good luck to the girl. 14 years, very successful. Six less than Philip, by the way. Just for the, but I'm sure she'll find out. Well, Kevin did say we'll see with ITV doing other stuff. So I'm sure she'll pop up somewhere. I can't wait.
I thought she was like gold dust for ITV. Is that?
It just shows what can change. What can change overnight. Maybe we should be in the Big Brother house. That's the place to go. Right, clip number two.
And that bogeyman still torments Glasgow.
Alex.
Yes.
That's about the podcast about the unsolved murders of the Glasgow women in the 1960s, which means that the case is being reopened because of good BBC content.
Yes, it's Bible John, the podcast that's promoted police in Glasgow to reopen the case. This is sort of a dream outcome if you produce something like this, isn't it? Or you do some journalism in this
way. There we go. Impact. Judge on impact, not on audience figures. Judge on impact, not on audience figures. The way that we should be judging things is around if laws are changed, if someone is held to account, if you fundamentally change the way that a thing is seen or the way that a thing is taken forward, that is the most important bit of journalism, which is exactly what the BBC should be doing, more original journalism, more change happening, more journalism that affects the way that society operates.
Right, clip number three.
You made a reservation for a mid-size, and she's a small.
Paul.
Who was that?
This is Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes.
The show finished, I think, 25 years ago, and they all ended up being arrested and bunged into prison. And he's hinting now about there being an alternative ending.
Yes, because it was sort of a universally hated ending to Seinfeld.
Yes, it was more hated probably than the end of Game of Thrones.
Are you a Seinfeld viewer?
No, I've watched the first episode of Seinfeld three times. I've never bothered to go further. It's like
three's pretty good. I mean, I think they should be very lucky, Alex, with that.
It's definitely worth it. It, like all things, it doesn't date quite as well as you'd hope it would. And this was because the comedian Jerry Seinfeld, the eponymous star of the sitcom, mentioned that, yeah, something is going to be happening that has to do with the ending, an event last week. Are you excited about Return for Seinfeld?
No, I never liked it. Never liked it. Never understood it. Never found it funny. I mean, I think the best quote is, it's a show about nothing. And that really says it all for me.
There we go. Well, that makes Paul our winner. For that, you get to mastermind our reboot of the new Seinfeld series.
Oh, fantastic. Well, can't done. Wait.
My thanks to both of you. Alex, where can people keep up with what you're up to?
At Alex Huds, AlexHuds on Threads, on Instagram, on TikTok. I'm still on X, but no one uses it anymore. But yeah, Alex Huds everywhere.
And Paul?
Oh, just look at the Newswise. This week I've got a nice double page article in C21 and a piece in Variety. That's probably all do.
Excellent. We'll put a note in the show notes. Thank you both.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it a lot. And lovely studio. Gorgeous.
And funny you should say that, Paul. This is the London Podcast Studios that we're recording the show in. It's in Holborn. And if you've checked out our YouTube channel or our posts on Twitter and LinkedIn, you'll have seen it. And you'll know that London Podcast Studios make us look as good as we sound. And you can get 25% off your first booking when you use the code MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com. That's MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com for 25% off. My name's Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill with support from Ollie Pitt. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts?
Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.